Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 26. We are here to talk about Inter Miami's newest signing, and that is, of course, Matias Rojas. We also have a few other things we're going to do today, including talk about some of the injuries and some of the things that have been going on in Inter Miami's world over the last couple days. But before all of that, as always, I'm your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. How are you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling great, man. It's been a good day for football fans, especially if you're a Man United fan. Liverpool lost. We got a couple of points in the bag. So all hunky-dory. Inter Miami plays this weekend. We're coming off of a win. Yeah, all seems up and cheery.
I was actually feeling a little melancholy this morning. I was thinking, you know, we haven't had an Inter Miami game in a couple of days, and we're not going to have one for a couple of days. I don't know how much I like this whole no having games in the midweek. I would love, you know, an Open Cup game. And then it hit me about 45 minutes ago that the reason I am feeling this way is because this is the night Inter Miami would have played the first leg of the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. As we speak, Monterrey and Columbus, the Columbus Crew, are playing each other. I believe Columbus is up 1-0 last time I checked. But I don't know, man. It just feels like the week is so much longer and there's so much time between Inter Miami games that it's not that fun. And I know we're going to get this a lot over the next couple months. So I'm having some pre-post stress.
Hey, that's where we come in. You know, that's why we do the midweek podcast, just to have a conversation going, keep the Inter Miami fun and vibes going. And we don't talk about the has-beens or what could have been. And we got knocked out. And that's it. You know, hopefully Columbus can represent the MLS and do some good stuff there, get the revenge on our behalf.
Yeah, I guess I am rooting for Columbus. I want them to do well for the MLS, and I also just want them to beat Monterrey. Monterrey is definitely beatable. We didn't do the things we needed to do, especially in that first game at home. Certainly not in that second game, but I think it was there to be won if we had played a little bit better. We had a better strategy, maybe a little bit more health, etc. Couple things we want to talk about before we get into Matias Rojas. We have sort of a scouting report, where he's been, what he's up to, a pros and cons list, and we'll talk about how we think he fits into the team. We're going to talk about the injuries. There's a lot of positive news, a lot of negative news since the last time we spoke, and so we'll go over all of it. And just a couple other things from around the Inter Miami sphere. Let's start with late last week. And we didn't talk about this in the pregame because we were going to talk about it in the postgame. And then we decided not to talk about it in the postgame. So we're talking about it now. Inter Miami signed this kid from Argentina named Giovanni Farena to the second team on loan. And I don't know. What do you think about this? Do you know anything about him?
I'll be honest, I haven't heard much about him before he actually signed on. Seems like an interesting acquisition. He's a tall center back, 20 years old, not that young. I'm thinking this might be one of those acquisitions where we've brought him on board to test him out in Inter Miami to see how he does there. And potentially in the summer, if he's performing well and if we see promise, we might bring him up because we know defense is an area that we're trying to build up on and an area that we want to obviously shore up going forward. So might be that thinking involved, but I'm not really sure where this came from. But hey, you know what? As long as he does well, we'll see how it goes.
Let's just speculate this on this for a minute, because I have talked to some people, you know, other fans of Inter Miami, trying to get a read on this, and everyone just thinks this is a nothing. And I don't know why Inter Miami would do this if it was a nothing. He is on loan to the B team, which means I don't really even know what it means. I think maybe he can come up and play four times, just like any other B team player. I'm not exactly sure. A $1.5 million buy option gives me the sense that they're not going to buy him, because that would take up a lot of a cap charge that you wouldn't want to spend on a player like this. You know, you want to go get a guy like Redondo or Diego Gomez with your U22 spots. You don't want to spend it on a kid that hasn't even proved it at senior team level. The best answer I got from anyone that I talked to was just that this is just Inter Miami trying to strengthen their B team and trying to make them more competitive. They were really bad last year. I don't really know if this is how they do it, how they'd go about it. I don't know. What do you, I mean, is this just like nothing to you?
At this point, yeah, because obviously he's not going to be playing for the first team. Again, I'm not really sure what the thinking behind this is. Maybe we're putting too much stock into just another addition to the B team. But I think there might be some promise with this player. I'm always a fan of the Boca school of football, and someone coming up from there, it seems to me that there's a some sort of a relationship and understanding going on between Inter Miami and Boca. We've had, I think, two dealings with them this transfer window. So overall, I think at this point in time, no point putting in too much stock or speculation behind this. But yeah, put him in over Freire, man. That's what my understanding is. I think if he does well, he might be one of those players that they're looking to bring up into the first team and see how he plays on from there.
Yeah, he signed his first professional contract with Boca like a week ago, right before he made this move. So it's not like he was a player that they've had on the roster for a couple of years and they're just looking to get some game time. It's not like this is a player that they feel like has a bright future and that Inter Miami wanted to throw him in. I don't really understand. And I don't know if Inter Miami is just really short on depth on the B team at center back. It doesn't feel like that's a reason to bring in a kid from a different country and go through that whole process. So I'm confused about this, and I'm keeping an eye open on it for later on, because I wonder if Inter Miami has bigger plans for this kid than maybe we would be led to believe right now. I think this is a name to keep in the back of your head, because I think there could be something interesting there.
It could be one of those things where we've realized that right now we don't have the space for him on the main roster, but this was an opportunity that we couldn't really give up on, and it was something that we really wanted to explore. So they thought, you know what, maybe let's bring him in for the B team for now. He's obviously going to be available for that game cap, right, to bring up an individual player from the B team up into the first team for four games. So if that works out, maybe that's something they want to see. And we used up our last roster spot for Matias Rojas, who we're going to talk about a lot this podcast, but maybe they thought defense is an area where we can work on, and yeah, this is the one way to potentially do a move without actually filling up a spot.
Well, everyone wanted us to sign another center back. So Tata Martino and Chris Henderson were like, here you go. This 20-year-old that no one's ever heard of. Yeah. Okay, well, I don't know if there's anything else to say about him. I mean, I'm excited to see him on the B team, I guess, and see how he does. And, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe he's a guy that we're going to have for an option in the summer in case there's an injury or something, and we just have a guy that we can put in. Anyways, let's talk about this third kit. I'm putting it on the screen. So anyone who's listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or, you know, after, I apologize. But it is a Miami Dolphins themed third kit. This is from Footy Headlines, which is pretty reliable. It says Miami across the front in Miami Vice font. And it's a teal with sort of white stripes, vertical stripes, and then some orange highlights. Any thoughts on this?
We spoke about this in the last podcast, and I think I'm going to have to see this in action. For me, this is one of those where I'm not a big fan of the pinstripes. It reminds me a little bit of the, I don't want to say German colors, but yeah. I really like the, yeah, there was one German kit some time ago that was this color with a little bit of aqua hint to it. So it reminds me of that. But I honestly really like the stakeholders that they had, the training kit that they put out. And I was hoping that was going to be one of our third kits, or we see that in action. This one seems more like I'm going to have to see how it looks on the players. I think it could look really good with the white shorts. I would love it if it had a black and aqua combination, which I don't think is the case. But yeah, interesting color combination.
Yeah, clearly they're channeling a lot of Miami themes, the Dolphins color, the Miami Vice front, says, you know, that says Miami. I've seen that a lot of the third kits for this year are going to have the name of the city on the front. There was an LAFC kit that has it like that. That's sort of a retro theme. And so I think Adidas is just doing something where they're going to put the city on the front and then the sponsor will be on the back somewhere. So expect the Royal Caribbean logo on the back. I don't know, man. I think there's a lot uglier third kits. It's not amazing. I'm not like instantly, you know, enamored and want to buy it right now. But as far as third kits go, Atlanta had one last year that I thought was pretty ugly. And a lot of teams have. So this one I think is reasonable, especially because it's Dolphins themed. I think a lot of people will get it just because in Miami and in South Florida, it'll fit in maybe a little bit better than if you're not from South Florida and you sort of don't know.
I'll say this though. I don't think I'll be buying this one anytime soon.
I'll say this. I'm definitely going to buy it. I have to figure out who I want on it. But my thing with kits is that I like to get one of my favorite players on it, and then that'll be the one kit I have for that player. And so obviously Messi, I already have Kramaski, some of those guys. So I don't have to figure out who I want for this. But the last thing I'll say,
you know how it goes though, right? If you wear that kit while we're playing and they win, then you're going to have to rock that kit for the entirety of the season. So you better be prepared.
That's if I can wear a shirt and make Inter Miami win, I will happily wear that shirt if that's all it takes.
I'm not sure if it fits your skin color, man. We'll have to see how you look in that aqua. I'm sure you'll.
I never said I'd wear it outside. The last thing I'll say is that generally these third kits for MLS have come out in sort of late July, early August. So I would expect that's when you see it. Maybe during the League's Cup or maybe right after. I could see them doing it, premiering it for a League's Cup game because there's going to be a lot of eyes, a lot of hoopla about the beginning of the League's Cup. So I could see that being a time that they roll these out. But if not, I would imagine it comes right after the League's Cup. The last thing I wanted to mention, just for the diehard Inter Miami fans and the people that are really into the Inter Miami, or rather the soccer circles of South Florida, Blaise Matuidi and Kieran Gibbs, two former Inter Miami players, have started a youth academy in Miami called 1FC. And if that's something that you're interested in, I would encourage you to go look it up and see what they're doing, because anything like that makes it more accessible for kids to get into high quality environments is an awesome thing. And so I did want to point that out. Anything else before? Let's get into the injuries next. But is there anything else that you've sort of had on your mind about Inter Miami lately?
No, I think we've covered pretty much all of it. Obviously, the transfer window is closed, so it looks like our roster is now fixed and ready to go. And we'll see. We'll see how it performs before the summer and whether we're going to have to rejink it or bring in new players in the summer, or whether we're just going to have to add a couple more additions and then we move on from there.
Okay, let's talk about Diego Gomez. The last time we saw him, he was in a lot of pain, coming off the field in the first half against Nashville over the weekend. We weren't sure what the injury was, but it looked bad just based on his reaction, based on how he had to come out of the game. He couldn't walk off. He had to be stretchered off. We have now found out it was a high ankle sprain, which is a lot better than maybe some of the initial prognostications. It's not an Achilles tear. It's not an ACL tear. It's not something that's going to keep him out for the next 9 months to a year. A high ankle sprain feels like a 4 to 6 week injury, probably closer to 6 weeks. And then even then, probably that's when he starts to feel better. It's a really bad one. So I don't want to minimize it because I'm sure it's very painful for him on a daily basis. But I think the worst case scenario was avoided here.
100%. 6 weeks is still a long time to lose out on a quality player like Diego Gomez. We've already seen the difference that Redondo's injury has done to this squad. So to lose another main starter midfielder, we're now essentially left with just Sergio Busquets, who's been our top three midfield choice, means that the other players are going to have to step up. 6 weeks, again, is a long time on paper, but it's a much worse injury that we've avoided, and thankfully, he's not going to be out for, you know, the entirety of the next couple of months. And hopefully we can have him back soon, have him back fully fit, and he can just come back as firing just as he was before his injury.
Yeah, I think there's a bright side to this, and I mentioned a little bit on our last podcast, but to go to your point, I think Inter Miami is built to survive this. I think Benami Kramaski is probably as close to a Diego Gomez replacement as you could find, maybe anywhere in the MLS. So I think that maybe not as a left winger, but in the midfield, he can step in and do a really good job. And this just sort of opens an opportunity for him. I feel very comfortable with David Ruiz out there. I feel very comfortable with Yannick Bright out there. And of course, we're going to see Julian Gressel in the midfield plenty. So it feels like there's still plenty of midfielders. And really, I think this hurts more in terms of depth at that left wing spot where we're back to Robert Taylor or bust, other than Matias Rojas, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. Robert Taylor also coming back. We'll talk about him in a minute. But the silver lining, I think, is that this feels like it could keep Diego Gomez at Inter Miami through the summer transfer window in Europe. He has been a target for a lot of teams, and you can obviously see why. He's a tremendous player, a great physical athlete, fits in any league, doesn't have any deficiencies athletically, and he's now putting together the complete game that really is enticing for a lot of teams. Brighton is the team that's been most connected with him publicly, but I'm sure that list is a lot longer. And of course, if you're connected to Brighton, they're known for having a really high quality scouting department. So I'm sure there's a lot of teams around Europe that are looking and interested in this player. But I feel like him missing 6 weeks, teams might be a little bit slower to jump onto him just because they want to make sure that he comes back healthy and is ready to go. And I don't know if teams are going to count on this player immediately and make him a priority in the transfer market if they can't count on him. And so I do think that this makes it more likely that we keep him through the rest of the season. And not that I ever want anyone to get injured, but if that is a silver lining, I think that could be a positive.
Yeah, but I won't hedge my bets against that too much because obviously the transfer window in Europe is long and he's going to be back by June and he's going to be playing a few games before the transfer window closes in Europe. So he's going to still have time to show what his abilities are. I want him to play well when he comes back. I want him to be as motivated and as impactful as he was before he came on. And then we'll see what happens from there on, because honestly, there's a player here and I would love to keep him on in for Inter Miami for another year if we can. But if he's destined for greatness somewhere else, then I'll wish him the best. But in terms of the roster itself, I want to bring us back to a point that you mentioned about the depth of Inter Miami. I think one good thing that Chris Henderson and the management and the coaching staff has done is obviously work on the depth. We knew that this is one of the most deep rosters created in MLS history. Now it's going to be tested. And we're going to have to see how quality this depth actually is. And I'm sure that Benjamin Kramaski and David Ruiz are going to have just as much of an impact, if not more. And yeah, we'll just have to see how it plays out. But I'm glad that it was a deep roster that they created, because boy, do we need it with all the injuries that we have.
Yeah, I just want to go back to what you said, that yes, the European window is long, but the number of teams that can afford a player that's going to cost as much as Diego Gomez, because Inter Miami is not going to let him go for less than $10 million. The number of teams that can afford him is limited. And then furthermore, the number of teams that can afford him and not have that player be like the key to your offseason at $10 million plus is even smaller. And so, of course, a team like Real Madrid or Manchester United or, you know, Manchester City or Bayern Munich could afford him late as just like a throw-in player. But I don't know if he's on the radar for those teams. And so you're kind of looking at a really small number of teams that can both afford to throw him, you know, have him be a secondary player in your transfer window and also afford him at $10 million plus, right? So I don't know. We'll see. And of course, if he wants to leave, I'm sure, you know, it's going to happen. I just want to put that out there. I also think that he's going to come back and be the same player, because this isn't one of those really long injuries, and it's only going to keep him out 6 weeks. So I'll have to build up his fitness. It's not like he's going to lose his ability to play soccer, which is good.
I question about Jordan for you. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, before we move on to
go ahead.
From Diego Gomez, an interesting thought in my mind is, where do you think he succeeds most in terms of his impact and play style? Which of the top five leagues do you think is most suited to his growth and most suited to his ability? And what teams do you think he's going to likely end up being interested in and are going to be interested in him?
To me, he's a Premier League player. I think he would do well in the Bundesliga too, just because in those leagues, you really need to be physical and athletic. I'm sure you'd do fine good in France too. I don't know if his profile fits as well into Italian soccer or La Liga, but I'm sure maybe he wants to go to La Liga just because of the cultural similarities with his native country and, you know, speaking Spanish. But to me, like, he has Premier League player written all over him. He's big, physical, fast, athletic, can keep up with the grind of that league. You know, I know we saw him finally get an injury, but he's not the kind of guy that picks up just little knocks here and there all the time. To me, like, the Brighton thing makes all the sense in the world. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah. For me, I think I completely agree with you. I can see him fit perfectly in a team like Wolves or Brighton or any of the physical. I mean, Premier League itself is a really physical league. So any of the mid-tier teams there, I think he would be a perfect fit. And I would say not even a bench player. I'd say he would potentially stake a claim to start in some of those teams. I agree with you. La Liga might not be the best place for him in terms of, you know, just his play style. But again, it would be interesting to see where he goes and how he adapts to that style of football, because there's definitely a player there and he's only going to grow and get better. So I, for once, selfishly would love to see him in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I watch the Premier League more than any other league. And so I would like to have him in there just so I can keep following him and watch him play more. But I'll be honest, I do think that's his future. That seems to be the league where there are a lot of teams that do have the money to afford players like him and not make him the like centerpiece or cornerstone of their offseason. So if I was expecting him to move this summer, I think a Premier League move makes a lot of sense.
Dude, imagine him scoring against Liverpool or Arsenal for Brighton. And we can say proudly, oh, this was an Inter Miami player, man. That sounds like a really, really fun thought to have, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I can see him terrorizing midfields in the Premier League, just like he does in the MLS. Maybe not today, but as we've seen over the last year, he's a guy with a lot of potential and he's going to keep getting better and better and better. And so getting into that environment is just, it's just going to skyrocket his potential. The other bad injury news is Jordi Alba. He didn't play last week. We saw him leave the game early the week before, but we finally got sort of a time frame on when he'd be back, and it was 3 weeks to a month, which means he'll miss three or four more games. This feels like also, you know, I'm okay with this. We have good depth at that position. I'm comfortable with Franco Negri and Noah Allen handling that position until he gets back. And a month is not, you know, like we saw some of the injuries last year where guys were gone for four to five months and missed most of the season.
Yeah, I think we, even with Franco Negri back, I do think we're going to see a little bit of shift from Noah Allen. I'm not worried about it too much, but I'd like to see how Noah Allen and Franco Negri handle the pressure of being the number one left back for at least the next couple of weeks. I'm sure they'll do well overall, and it's not necessarily too much of a drop in quality, but it's just about those games where we would have Jordi Alba sort of make a little bit more of a difference and be more impactful. So maybe we miss him in games where we need to change something or we're behind and we need someone to lead that left side and score a goal or create something. I'm not sure if Franco Negri and Noah Allen are the kind of players who are going to change something too much in the pitch itself, but I think I'm comfortable in their defensive abilities going forward.
Okay, but let's remember, we are going to be playing MLS teams for the next 3 months. It's not like we're playing the sort of big games that we really wanted to be at the top of our game for. Again, we're playing the New England Revolution, who are the worst team in MLS, or the worst team in the East, at least. It's okay. Like, Noah Allen is fine to start and play 90 minutes in that game, and we can still definitely win that game. The New York Red Bulls the next week, that's going to be a bigger game. It's in South Florida. You know, you want Franco Negri ready for that game. But then after that, Montreal, Orlando City, DC United, Vancouver. Vancouver's solid. But again, these aren't Monterrey. These aren't Columbus. They're not Philadelphia, who we will see in you know, maybe 2 months. But I think Jordi Alba will be back for all of those games. So I don't know. I'm very comfortable with Franco Negri back there.
Yeah, I think I still have a little bit of PTSD from our wild games that we've had in the last few weeks and not being able to beat some of the teams that we should have, like Montreal. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't trust this team enough as of now to get the results without actually putting in some grind and getting us fans through some sort of a heart attack. But I agree with you. On paper, I think we should be able to handle these teams fairly well.
And again, even the games that we dropped, it's not like we dropped the games because Jordi Alba wasn't playing well enough, or, you know, it wasn't like Jordi Alba was the difference in any of those games. Yeah. So, you know, he's a great player. He's the best left back in the MLS and probably the best left back in the league's history. But Franco Negri is a solid MLS caliber starter. So I'm not too worried. And again, 3 to 4 weeks, he's going to miss 3 or 4 games. It's okay. Okay, let's be more positive because we're getting 3 players back this week, although I hope none of them play this week. Let's start with Robert Taylor. He's been gone for the last 4 games, I think. He's missed 4 games, 4.5 games, because he left in the first half in the Monterrey game. We really missed him against Monterrey. I think we missed him against Colorado. Once we moved Diego Gomez up to left wing, I think we were fine again. But Robert Taylor is a huge piece, and I know you love him, and I know I'm sure you're excited to see him back.
Oh, 100%. Top 3 players in this MLS roster as of now. And that ranking will not change until the summer. I love Robert Taylor. I think he's a profile that we don't have anywhere else in the field or on this roster. The kind of penetration that he brings into our front line, the runs in behind, and the outlet that he provides, barring Diego Gomez and what we saw of him in that position in the last couple of games, nobody else does that. So having Robert Taylor back is going to be a massive, massive boost for us because he's just going to bring a completely different dimension to our attack. And we're going to be a lot more threatening. Of course, we are already threatening with Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi. But Robert Taylor adds another dimension that allows us to just elevate our attack a lot more. So very excited to have him back. I don't think he should be rushed back immediately, especially in this game against New England. We discussed not risking some of these injured players or players who are coming back from an injury on the turf. So I think it's still going to be a couple of games before we see him come back to the starting 11.
You know what? Maybe at the end we can spend a few minutes talking about what we hope for the lineup to be this weekend. Maybe not our expectations, but our hopes. Because I think there's a lot to say there. And yeah. But yeah, dude, having Robert Taylor back, he's a phenomenal left winger in this league. He was the second best player behind Messi when they arrived. He was a machine, and he's been a goal scoring machine and a goal contribution machine since the beginning of last season. So having him back is going to be huge, especially now that Robert Taylor's gone. Our left wing depth is very narrow, very small. And so getting him back, and he's your number one guy. So it's always good to have your number one guy back. Let's talk 100%. About Leo Campana. Let's talk about Leo Campana. He's also going to be back. And maybe I should remind people, Robert Taylor had a hamstring injury, and so did Leo Campana. He's been nursing it for a couple of weeks. He tried to play through it, and he sort of re-aggravated it. And so he's kind of just spent a little bit more time letting it heal. Let's see if I can find the game that it happened. He didn't play for a couple games, came out early, and then he started missing the second. He came out in the Colorado Rapids game, and then he missed the last 3 games. how do I put this? He is not instrumental to this team being successful, but also he's a quality player and a nice player to have off the bench if you need him. So it's good to have him back.
If Luis Suarez was not a striker, or if Luis Suarez was not performing the way he has been performing, we would be relying a lot more on Leo Campana, and we'd be thankful and grateful for having him as our second striker. And I think it's kind of sad that with Luis Suarez firing on all cylinders and producing the output that he is right now, Campana has sort of been sidelined. But I think he's one of the best second option strikers in the MLS. And
he's the very best. Yeah. He's possibly the best second striker option in the MLS in years, because he's a starting striker in the MLS. That's his talent level.
And I think it's just going to take a couple of games, maybe start him and give him a little bit of rhythm, and he's going to start scoring as much as we want him to. But yeah, it's a really good dilemma to have two strikers who you can really rely on and who can produce the level of output that we have them producing. And I think he can't come back sooner, because eventually we're going to have to give Luis Suarez a bit of a rest or have him come off the bench for a couple of games, maybe here or there. Don't know if Tata is going to do that, but I think it's going to be important to have Leo Campana back fully fit and firing.
It's a shame that the U.S. Open Cup is not going to include Inter Miami this year. It's a shame that we didn't advance, farther in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and that Campana was injured, because there was another 5 or 6 or 7 games for him to start just from those two tournaments. Maybe not in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but in the weekend games in between them. I think he's going to have a hard time getting minutes this year. I don't know what his future is, but I really like him as a player, and so I'm just going to be positive and assume he's going to be around for the long haul. Because listen, next season, I don't know if Luis Suarez is going to be back. He's not under contract. You can easily see him retiring after this season. And so I would want a player like Campana to be your striker moving forward, but I'm afraid we might have to get rid of him before that. And that would make me really sad. With that said, he's still scoring. Like, every time he starts, he gets a goal. So he's like a good player.
He's really going under the radar. He honestly is. With Luis Suarez taking away all the spotlight, I think we're kind of letting Campana get off the hook a little bit.
Yeah, Campana has 4 starts and 3 goal contributions. So he's like a good player. Let's talk about another good player, and this is the one that's most exciting, and that is Ian Frey. Just got posted this afternoon from Inter Miami that he is back. He's training with the team. This has been sort of coming over the last couple of weeks, but Inter Miami made it official today by reintroducing him into not just social media, but into the lineup. They gave him a nice hooray, the whole team. He is a guy that's had 3 ACL injuries, but maybe we shouldn't talk about that, and we should talk about how exciting he was when he did play for this team, because it was very exciting. And I think last season, of all the young players we had, Benjamin Kronaski, David Ruiz, Noah Allen, Diego Gomez, Facundo Farias, Toto Aviles, all of them, this player for the 10 or 11 games he played was the most exciting. And he seemed like he had the brightest future, the most potential. And so I am really excited to have him back. And if Tata puts him out there this weekend, I will say fire Tata, because this is not the game to play him in.
When I saw that post by Inter Miami on Twitter, I sort of had a little bit of a heart drop, because I thought we'd let him go in favor of Matias Rojas, because I thought it was a farewell post. And then I actually read it and I was like, oh, thank goodness, he's just back from injury. I agree with you. I think we have a lot of dynamism up top. In the front three, we have a lot of dynamism in the midfield with Diego Gomez, Benjamin Kromaski, but our defense is a little bit lethargic and slow and seems like a little leggy for the personnel that we have in there. Ian Frey is going to change that completely. I 100% think he's, when fit, one of our top center backs, And I can't wait for him to be back and be involved in the mix-up because he's going to add so much to our game in the defense. And yeah, see, I wasn't the only one, thank God. But well, thankfully, I was wrong in that. I think he's going to add a very different dimension to our back line. And he offers some stuff that obviously the other center backs don't. So for me, him and Aviles going forward, if both of them can stay fit, oof, that's a good combination, and I'd love to see that happen in the future.
I'm just going to say, everyone just enjoy what he is because he's had three ACL injuries and it's unclear what he's going to be coming back. So just, give him some time, give him some patience. He's still a young player, right? He hasn't had a full season since he was like 18 years old. And so, by like his experience, he's like a 19-year-old. And so just even if he makes a mistake, even if he is in the wrong spot or whatever, just wait until you see the exciting things and hopefully they come in bunches. Okay, we're 35 minutes in and that was supposed to take about 20 minutes. So maybe we should cut to the chase and start talking about Inter Miami's newest acquisition. Yesterday was the deadline for the transfer window for the MLS, and Inter Miami got a player in right before the deadline, a guy that we've known about for about 2 months now. I'm not sure why it took them all the way till now to get it done, but Matias Rojas is officially a Heron of the Inter Miami football team. What do you think?
Wait, so we didn't sign Neymar this season? Damn.
That's the summer.
Matias Rojas. I feel like we've been talking about him so much or just alluding to him so much over the last few weeks that I feel like he's already an Inter Miami player. I'm glad this came through finally. Lord alone knows why it took so long for this move to come through. But for me, I think adding that one extra player who's going to have a similar profile to Robert Taylor, who's going to be able to run in behind, have a little bit of a dynamic play to his to the front line. He can play multiple positions, left wing, right wing, center mid. And thankfully, we no longer have to rely on Robert Taylor as our sole out and out winger. So for me, I think a great signing. He's going to add so much to this front line. And it just completely elevates our front three more than how impactful it already is. So I'm excited to see what he brings to this team, man.
I've done a decent deep dive into him over the last couple of days, and so I kind of wanted to bring some more information that you wouldn't find in just a tweet to this episode,
I
and
watched
maybe
a
we could
few
talk about it.
videos as well.
I did a little more than that, but we'll talk about how this makes sense on the raw. Actually, maybe we should start there because I thought the reason that this wasn't going to happen is because. I'm sorry. I thought the reason this took so long was because they needed to move another player off the roster. They were at 30 people, at 30 people on the 30-man roster. This took them to 31, and so the idea was they had to move a player in order to make room for him. That didn't happen. The deadlines passed. They didn't move anyone off. They didn't, they told the reporters that they didn't have to move anyone. So I'm not exactly clear on how this works. I don't know if this is MLS turning a blind eye. I don't know if this is MLS letting them skirt the rules, or if there is a move that they made that they didn't feel like they needed to publicize at all. My initial thought was maybe they released Felipe Valencia at some point in the offseason and they just didn't tell anyone. But I looked at I did some research. I looked at his Instagram. He did take pictures with the team in their pregame photos with the new jerseys and everything. So they had him as part of the senior team in the preseason, even though he didn't come on the preseason roster. He hasn't appeared for the B team yet, at least to my knowledge. I don't know if he's injured. I really don't know what the deal is with him. My impression was that he was probably the player that they loaned from the A team to the B team. And as a reminder, you're only allowed to do that with one player and have him be taken off the 30-man roster. So that was sort of my impression when the first round of roster compliance came around to start the season. It's possible that they released him and that they used that on Tyler Hall or maybe Santiago Morales, or maybe, well, not Israel Bowe, right? But one of those two. So that was my initial instinct today. Maybe Robbie Robinson has decided he wanted to retire or something. I don't know. I mean, not that we would expect to hear anything from Robbie Robinson because that's not his style, but we haven't heard anything about him since the preseason. So I'll be honest, I really have no idea how they did this, and I would just be speculating.
Two words, pure vibes. That's how we did it.
Yeah. They're just daring my...
Yeah.
They're just daring the MLS to do something about it.
Exactly. We're trying to prove all the executives correctly when they accused Inter Miami of cheating the system. I think we're going to find out fairly soon what the issue is and how we've managed to accomplish this. But as of now, let's just enjoy it. All we can do is trust the backroom staff that they know what they're doing, and hopefully we've not done some underhanded stuff, because yeah, that would be painful.
It's just pure vibes. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Enjoy it while we can.
I did see some, you know, people say that the reason this took so long was because they needed to wait for FIFA to approve his free agency from Corinthians, because he was under contract and then they didn't pay him what they were supposed to pay him. And so they were trying to mutually break the contract and they needed a FIFA approval. I have no idea why FIFA would approve that on April 23rd in the morning to allow them to sign him later in the afternoon. There's no reason that it would have happened then. It would have happened last week or last month or, you know, whenever, but there's no reason for it to have took till the MLS deadline. And if that was the case, there was some, you know, final decision to be heard, that would have been reported. So clearly he became a free agent from FIFA, not yesterday, last week or earlier, because it was like, they would have been freaking out about this. They would have been a lot of hustle about this. He wouldn't have been at the sideline on Saturday night. Been a done deal.
He was obviously present at the game, so I'm not sure. It must have been, you know, confirmed before that game already. Otherwise, they wouldn't have blatantly have him sit with the rest of the team in Inter Miami kit and just 2 days later, you know, no news of him being signed on. So obviously, I think it was done a couple of days earlier, but I'm not sure why it took so long or what the thinking behind that was. But he's now an Inter Miami player, so we get to see more of him in that pink.
Yeah, well, we get to see some of him in that pink, and I'm excited. He's from Paraguay. He's been part of the Paraguayan national team. He's got 11 caps for the senior national team. He started his career there. He made a move to Racing Club in Argentina in 2019, where he really blossomed and sort of came onto the scene. Eventually, last summer, he made the move to Corinthians in Brazil. And there is when his story took a downward turn. He wasn't a very impactful player for Corinthians. He made 24 appearances. Corinthians fans didn't have a very high opinion of him. It wasn't a good move. I think he was a free agent, so that's when he got the opportunity to go to Brazil. And so basically in my head, I've just thrown that entire period away, because sometimes moves don't work for things other than just a player's talent level. You know, it's a different language, different culture. I do think the Brazilian league is a little bit of a step up from the Argentine league. And so, maybe he just wasn't cut out for that level, or he wasn't getting the game time that, you know, he was used to, or just culturally, it could just have been a bad fit. A million reasons, really. I do think coming to Inter Miami is going to be more like going to Racing Club. There's going to be a lot of Argentinians around. He'll have another Paraguayan on the team. So I think that there's a chance that this is a lot more comfortable of a fit and a lot more productive of a move for him.
Do you think the pressure on him to perform immediately and have that level of impact is going to be slow, just because there are players around him who can sort of overshadow, you know, he's playing next to the greatest player of all time. He's playing next to Diego Gomez, who's doing so well. So there are a lot of other players who are going to take the responsibility of making those goals and assists. So in the meantime, at least for the near month or two, he can just settle in and try and play himself into form, and that's going to take away some of the pressure from him.
No, I don't. So here's what I did over the last couple of days. I went back and looked at his last 18 to 20 games for Racing Club, and kind of went through game by game, looked at some of the advanced analytics, looked at him as a whole and got a sense for him as a player when he was at Racing Club, which was sort of his, I think, his peak as a player to this point. And my sense was he did best when he was the guy. And so when you say that, I kind of get the impression that maybe this might not be a great fit. He's a ball dominant winger. He likes to take players on. He's decent at it. You know, he's not messy, but he's decent at it. He's got a really nice left foot. I will say the more that I looked into him, the more I thought both Inter Miami fans are not going to like watching him. And that also he might not be as good of a fit as I initially thought, but I still think he's a good player, and I still think he's going to be a quality addition. What do you know about him? I know you said you watched some of his videos. What are your like initial thoughts on him?
The two things that stood out for me when I did some of my research was A, his goal contributions have been far and few in the last couple of years. He's not been as involved in the final third output as we would like him to be. That being said, he's got an absolute monster of a left foot on him. He's obviously on corners for a lot of his teams. He whips in a really good ball. So I think that's going to add another dimension. Hopefully helps us get a few goals off set pieces. We're obviously going to have Messi taking most of them, but he's going to be an option when Messi's on the bench. And then I thought that he was fairly press resistant in the highlights that I saw of him, which might be interesting in terms of a profile on this particular team, because sometimes we struggle to hold the ball, and especially our wingers don't get as involved in the game and wait for the ball to come to them. And it all breaks down when the midfielders are unable to pass the ball to our wingers, to Robert Taylor or to Julian Gressel on that side. Obviously, Messi comes in to receive the ball. For me, he's going to be similar to Messi in the sense that he's going to want to get as involved into the game as possible. And I think he'll be similar in holding the ball and progressing the ball like Messi does, obviously not to that degree and not to that quality. But from what I've seen in terms of his highlights, he seems to like to take on players, as you mentioned, and then seems fairly press resistant. So I'd like to see how that translates into a full 90-minute game and not just the highlights.
Okay, let's start with that left foot, because he does have a monster left foot. It's not Lionel Messi, obviously, but it's better than any other player on our team. He kind of reminds me of Robert Taylor's right foot, where he can just take a step in and just fire from deep, and he has the power to, you know, score from, you know, 30 yards
and
out.
And it's a dipping knuckle ball.
He's got a really good left foot. When it's right, it's really good. And so when you have that, there's going to be some highlight moments where he's going to, you know, do something really impressive with that left foot. Second, I think he is a very technical player. And so that kind of leads him to being press resistant. The problem is, and so I think that's going to play out in Inter Miami's half. He's also a creative playmaker. And so he tries to do things that here's what I'll say. He turns the ball over a lot. And it's not for a lack of technical ability, but it's for trying to create. And so you give a little bit more freedom for your creators to turn the ball over. Just to give some numbers to this, Lionel Messi this year has had a possessions lost of about 15.5 per 90, which is pretty good. But also that's who you want to lead the team in that statistic, because he's the guy you wanted the ball the most. In the 18-game sample that I looked at, he turned the ball over about over 20 times per 90. So he's going to lose the ball a lot. It's interesting because he has the technical ability to not let that happen, but he does it anyways. So I think that's why, you know, we're going to give him some herons that flew north, because he's going to have a game where he turns the ball over 15 times and you're going to like be tearing your hair out. Or he's going to come on for a 12-minute cameo and he's going to turn over 4 times in that 12 minutes. So that's going to be really frustrating.
For me, I think because of the position that he plays in, as long as he doesn't turn it over in dangerous positions, as long as he turns it over in the opposition's half while trying something different, I can forgive that.
Yeah, but
my favorite player, and I'm gonna expose my football personality here, because my favorite player is Bruno Fernandes, and he can be the most frustrating player to watch in some games because he turns the ball over at least 50 times a game. But when he does stuff, it's just absolutely magical to watch. So for me, I think if he can have the level of output that we want from him and make a difference in certain games where we need him to make a difference, as long as he doesn't give away the ball in dangerous positions, I think that should be okay.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But when you're talking about a guy like Bruno Fernandes from Manchester United, he's their creative outlet. Like, he's their guy. And so when you're talking about putting Rojas on this team, he's not. And once he does something stupid, Luis Suarez is going to look at him like, dude, what are you doing? Lionel Messi is going to be like, no, don't do that. And, you know, even guys like Julian Gressel, it feels like they've tamped down on that sort of creativity because they're trying to play within a structure that allows the best players to be the best players. And Matias Rojas is going to have to fit into that. And again, when he was at his best at Racing, he was the guy that could do exactly what you're talking about and take those chances. And I don't know if he's going to be that guy in a roster with Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez specifically. Now, when he plays without those guys, you like that, right? When you're talking about him on that right wing and maybe Robert Taylor on the left side with Campana up the middle, have at it, man. Go make a 30-yard shot. Like, that would be awesome. But in the meantime, especially when he's playing with Messi and Suarez, I'm a little worried about the fit.
I hear what you're saying. Sorry, just a counterpoint on that. I hear what you're saying, but there may be a hypothetical here where we might think that, yes, he might want to be the player in a team like Racing, but playing next to Lionel Messi has to temper down that ego, right? Has to give that sense of, okay, I'm going to be able to play with some of the best players in the world, and I'm going to adapt my style to how they want to play. So that's my only hope, that potentially he learns to adapt and learns to play with the big boys on our team.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And this is what I'm worried, and I don't know. I didn't watch the games in Corinthians, but I'm worried that's what happened at Corinthians, where he took a step up in talent level and everyone around him was better, and he wasn't able to figure out how to be impactful. That's just a concern of mine. Like I said, I didn't really deep dive into his time at Corinthians just because I'm not sure. Well, when I started, I wasn't sure how relevant it would be. I'm sure now I think it's a little bit more relevant. But other than that, at Racing, he was actually really good at finishing. You know, I know you said that you didn't get that sense, but he actually outscored his XG by a substantial margin. So maybe that was just, maybe I just watched a good run of games for him, but I think he had like 10 goals in 18 games and maybe like five and a half XG out of that. He did have some, I think maybe two of them were penalties though. So something to keep in mind. He's a quality athlete and I think he'll fit in well in the MLS. This is something that I talked about a lot when we signed Federico Redondo from the Argentine League, from the Primera División division. He is a better athlete, I think, and I'm not as worried about him as I was for Redondo. Although Redondo is not a bad athlete, he's better than I expected. I also don't think it matters as much when you're an offensive player in the MLS because the defensive players aren't as good as the attacking players, just because of the way the salary cap works and you have to spend your money on your goals. And so, as Redondo, we wanted to be a six. We needed him to be able to keep up with those high quality midfielders and, you know, stop those runs from those pacey wingers. It's not as big of a problem when you're in the attack. The thing that concerns me though, that I didn't think was a problem until the last couple of days, is he's very left footed. It feels like I kind of expected him to be a player that could play on both sides. I thought he would be like Facu Farias. I thought that was sort of the profile of player he was going to be. And it's not the sense I got. It feels like he's really a right-sided player. At least that's the sort of the sense that I got. But I don't know. Maybe you felt differently.
I'm not too sure, because for me, I think his playing style obviously dictates him being that inverted winger on that right side and coming in, cutting in, and shooting the ball. But I think he might be able to work on the left side. I haven't seen too much footage of him playing on the left side, so you might actually be right there. But I think if we don't want him to be if we don't want him to be an inverted winger, if we want him to be an out-and-out outlet who provides assists and puts the balls into the box, I think he can play on the left side and provide that service to Suarez and Campana in terms of those outswinging cross balls on the left side. But we'll see. We'll see how it works out.
The problem is then he gets in the way of Jordi Alba, right? Like if you want him to be a left-sided left winger and you want him to cut to the baseline and get in high-quality crosses, that's what your fullback does. That's what your left back does. So,
but you're forgetting he can also play in the number 10 in the center mid position. So again, a lot of hypotheticals here. And I guess this is the purpose of this podcast as well, right? To try and figure out how he fits into the team. So I think when and if he plays in that left side, I would expect him to play slightly more central and then Jordi Alba to be that overlapping outlet in the left side. And I think that's one of the reasons why he bought him as well, because he seems to be quite versatile across that front line. He can play as the number 10, the left and the right wing. It'll be really interesting to see where Tata utilizes him, but I completely understand your point as well, that he might be too left-footed for the kind of versatility that we expect of him in the MLS.
Yeah, left-footedness isn't really the thing I want to say, because again, he's very technical. I'm sure he's fine with his right foot. It's just that he feels like a guy that his skill set thrives on the right side. And I don't really know what his impact is on the left side. He seemed to like to play in the channels when he's on the right side, not a guy that plays out on the, you know, out on the he doesn't play that wide, which is something I really want in my left winger at Inter Miami, because you want to create that space that gives space centrally for Messi and Suarez and anyone that's playing centrally. So I don't know. I'm a little bit more worried. Maybe we should talk about his fit when Messi's not on the team, not in the lineup, and then we can come back to when Messi is, because it feels to me like it makes all the sense in the world when Messi is resting or he, you know, needs to come off early or he's going to be gone for international duty. This feels like he steps in right easily and just kind of takes over the same exact role and you don't have to change much. Is that how you're thinking about this?
Yeah, I think for me, he's been brought in as that backup option because he's a like-for-like fit to Messi. Obviously, a big downgrade on the quality and the ability because he's nowhere near Messi. But I think in terms of the playing style, in terms of how he wants to cut in on the inside, play a little centrally through the channels, as you mentioned, I think that's exactly the reason that he's been brought in when Messi's away on international duty, when Messi needs to be rested, when he might have an injury that he's nursing. Matias Rojas can just fit into this team and fulfill that role of being that sort of a creative outlet. Here's why I'm not worried about him when Messi is there either, because I don't think he's going to be a regular starter. Unless he warrants it, I don't think Tata's going to start him off in the starting 11 when Messi's fit. And for me, I think Gressel might still be in front on that right wing side compared to Matias Rojas, and he might actually have to play himself into this team before he gets into the starting 11. So I don't think he's been brought in to automatically fit into the starting 11. I think he's been brought in as a utility and a bench option, but I may be completely wrong here. I'm not sure what the thinking behind this move was in terms of where they see him fit.
Yeah, it would be nice to know what his contract was, because Inter Miami, after they got roster compliant, cleared another $1.5 million with by moving DeAndre Yedlin and John Mota. So there was plenty of financial space, and Chelo Wiegand doesn't take that up. I think he's, you know, under $200K for the year, which means that you could easily give a guy like Matias Rojas $1 million. And if you're paying him that, you expect him to be an impact player. If they're paying him $250,000, you know, if they're paying him what they're paying Robert Taylor or Drake Callender or a player like that, then he can be a bench piece that, you know, like it's unclear whether they're saving $1 million in cap space for the summer window, or if they created that space so that they could sign Matias Rojas. And if they did use most of it on Matias Rojas, he has to be like a real player. You know, it doesn't mean he has to start every game, but it's like, you know, Julian Gressel might not start in a midfield with, when you have Redondo Gomez and Sergio Busquets all healthy, but he's still a big player that is an important piece of this team. And so again, if you're giving Rojas that much money, you're expecting him to be the same, even if he doesn't start every game. I have no idea what the answer is there, but okay. So when Messi is on the pitch, right, keeping it back 4-3-3, it feels like the only place to play him is as a left winger, right? So
I could see him potentially being in the midfield as well. You never know.
You think so?
Yeah.
I just
could play that Diego Gomez role.
It just, okay, here's another thing I'll say. He doesn't play any defense. He's not a defender at all. He's not a good defender. And so, again, almost everything I watched from him was him as a right winger, either in a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1 or something like that, a 3-4-3, something like that. But he didn't do anything defensively, and the advanced analytics didn't love him as a defender either. So I don't get the sense that he can just run into the midfield and be like a real force there. You know, maybe if you play a 4-2-3-1 type of thing, he can be a 10, but I don't know if we have two holding midfielders that you feel comfortable putting in a 4-2-3-1 if one of them has to be Sergio Busquets. So I don't know.
Here's an idea. 4-2-3-1, because that's exactly what I was thinking as well. 4-2-3-1 with Busquets and Bright, Messi as the 10, Rojas on the right, Taylor on the left, and then Suarez up top. That could work. That could be an option. I'd actually like to see that.
Is that the lineup on Saturday? Or
ooh,
I'm kidding.
Maybe.
No, I'm kidding. yeah, dude, I don't know. I'm curious to see what it is, because they must have an idea, right? Obviously, they've seen a lot of him and they studied him and they found this guy and thought he would be a good addition. So clearly Tata Martino has a plan, but I don't exactly know what it is yet. So I'm looking forward to finding out. I do think he's going to start on Saturday, though. Tata likes to throw guys in and see what they have. And so I think he's going to get the first 45 minutes just to go out there and run around and play ball and try and figure out how to make it work. And, you know, he'll go the full 90 if it's decent.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that at all, actually. I'd like to see him get a run out, especially against New England, where the stakes are fairly low and he can show some, you know, style and show some of his ability. I think that'd be a good play, and I'm actually excited to see him. What I will say from our conversation, though, is I think overall, in the grand scheme of things, he just adds a different dimension and a different option for Tata. And whether he's a starter, whether he comes off the bench, I do think he'll give something different to this team, which we haven't seen. And maybe it's just a way of us adding a little bit more versatility and a little bit more dynamism to our starting 11, and maybe trying different formations or playing with a different profile. But time will tell.
Yeah, I know I've just said a lot of negative things about him, but I do think he's a really talented player. I don't think his time at Corinthians is an indication of who he is. I think we'll get a better version of him. I think his time at Racing was probably more like what we're going to get now. Just a fun fact, he was teammates with Toto Aviles. I sort of turned on some of the film and I just saw Toto Aviles out there and I thought, well, I wasn't expecting that because I had forgotten he was there. And I am excited to see him play, and I don't know how he fits in, but I think he's a talented player. And I think for this league, he's going to be a quality player. And whether that's as a bench option or as a left winger, I don't know. Or how he fits in with Messi, I don't know. But I'm excited to find out. So I'm excited about this player, honestly. It feels like the scouting report, right? We talked about him. He's got a great left foot. He's a technical player, but he does turn the ball over. He really likes to take players on. Quality athlete. Doesn't play defense, and he takes a lot of shots. And he takes a lot of shots from outside the box, which is kind of, you know, Inter Miami fans didn't love when Jean Mota did that, but I think that this player is going to have a little more quality than Jean Mota, at least in terms of finishing. So it might not bother them as much, but it might get on their nerves. I don't know. We'll see. Anything else?
Exactly what this team needs. Yeah, exactly what this team needs, right? Less defense, more offense. Just pump out those goals. That's what we want. Dude.
Hey, listen. Every time we've lost a game this year, it's because we didn't score enough goals. So maybe that's the answer.
Maybe that is the answer.
In fact, every time I've ever watched them lose, it's because we didn't score enough goals. So I think that might be the solution.
Like wise man Michael Owen once said, you always lose the game when you don't score enough. So there you go. That's
anything
the
else about anything else about him, though? I mean, that
he's
feels
a shiny
like,
new object. I think we're all are really excited to see him because he's a new acquisition. And all I'm going to say is hopefully he can brush off whatever issues he was facing at Corinthians and treat this as a new chapter, because not every day do players get to play with the likes of Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez. And I think he's going to be a positive signing for us. And I'm hoping, like Chelo Wiegand, he turns out to be the best right winger in the MLS history after Lionel Messi, obviously.
I don't think you're at risk of making a claim like that after two games. Just a hunch.
Watch my Twitter space, guys.
Okay, before we wrap it up, maybe we can spend 5 minutes talking about this weekend. They're playing against New England, and you know, maybe let's talk through our thoughts on who we'll predict to be the starting lineup, and maybe who we'd want to be the starting lineup. New England plays at the New England Patriots, you know, American Football Stadium. And so it's a turf field. It's way too big for them as a soccer team. Last year, Franco Negri got hurt there. That's where he tore his ACL, I believe. It's a turf field, and it's a place where there's been a lot of injuries. I think that I saw a study that's the stadium that's had the most injuries in MLS over the last couple of years. Like, even other turf fields haven't been as bad as Gillette Stadium in New England. So with that in mind, we have a lot of players that are either coming back from hamstring injuries or recently coming back from hamstring injuries. And we have a lot of players that we don't want to lose to a hamstring injury. So let's talk through who we want to see in the lineup starting on Saturday night. And I hope, or I think that we're both going to want to see a 4-3-3, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start.
Unless it's a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, I do not want to see even the face of a 5 at the back or a 3 at the back, please.
Okay. Let's assume Drake Callender's in goal, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Your center backs.
Locked in.
Your center backs. You have Toto Aviles, who I think is probably going to start. And then you have Christophe, who might be healthy, might not be healthy, who's coming back from a hamstring injury. And you've got Nico Freire, who's also had plenty of lower body problems and I think a hamstring issue this season twice already. So are we starting Ryan Saylor? What's the plan there? Are we just risking it with Nico Freire?
Hey, we've just got a new center back, man. Just put on Giovanni Ferreira and we're good to go. That's the plan, right? That's how you bought him.
He comes, he tears his ACL and he goes back.
Yeah. That's the plan, right?
I want to take that back. I'm really sorry. I didn't mean that. I'm really sorry.
I really hope that's not the case. But for me, I think I wouldn't mind seeing a Ryan Saylor or a Noah Allen here. I think keep Christophe and Ferre on the bench for this one because there's definitely risk of damage there. But I think, give Ryan Saylor a run out.
Worth noting that the New England Revolution are, again, the worst team in the East and one of the worst teams in MLS. And not because they've had a bad start, but because they're a bad team. They do have a lot of young players, and we'll talk about them on the pregame show, but they have a lot of young, exciting players, but these young players are like 17, 18. They're not ready to be impact players in the MLS. So, they're not a great team. So it makes it easier to put some guys off, you know, have them come off the bench or rotate the squad a little bit. So Ryan Saylor and Aviles, is that your tandem in the back?
That's my pick.
Okay. You have to start Chelo Wiegand because he's your only right back. At left back, no Jordi Alba, and Franco Negri is coming back from an ACL tear, so I don't know if I want to play him either. Is this a Noah Allen game?
This is a Noah Allen game. Put him on. Give me Noah Allen. Inject that in the veins.
For me, that's the answer. I don't know how many games he's going to get at left back this season, but this feels like one that's a Noah Allen game. And not because like he's good enough. He's good enough to be there. But I just, with Franco Negri coming back from that specific injury, I don't want to risk him on a turf. And then obviously Jordi Alba is not available. So it's not a talent thing with Franco Negri where I think you have to wrap him in plastic, but just because he's coming back from that specific injury. To me, that's what I would want is the back four. Noah Allen, Ryan Saylor, Tota Aviles, and Chelo Weekend. And I still think with Callander in the back, you can get a win with those five. Let's talk about the midfield. No Diego Gomez, no Federico Redondo. Who you got?
I think Sergio Busquets. I think he's going to be okay on that field. David Ruiz. And then who else have we got? Lawson Sunderland still plays for us, right? We haven't seen him in a while.
You've got Sunderland. You've got Julian Gressel. You've got Benjamin Kramaski, who is coming back from an injury, but it's a back injury. It's not a muscle injury. It's not a lower body injury. And you got Yannick Bright.
I would go for Busquets, Ruiz, and I think he's going to play Gressel in there. So those three are going to be on midfield.
What would you want? What would you do if you were, you got to choose?
I personally would prefer Busquets, Ruiz, and Kramaski.
By the way, Yannick Bright also coming back from a hamstring injury.
Yeah, no. I would want Busquets, Ruiz, and Kramaski just because I think it's a lot more dynamic. And given the deficiency that we have in the back line, I think we'll need a little bit more of a defensive-minded, athletic midfield. So for me, those three are the ideal combination. But I think we're going to get Gressel, Ruiz, and Busquets.
I think we're definitely going to get Gressel. I think this is a game for Gressel because he isn't an explosive athlete. I don't think he's at the same like a likelihood of injuring himself as someone who is a little bit more explosive. So I think Gressel makes a lot of sense in this game. I don't think Sergio Busquets has any risk of getting injured because he doesn't have muscles to injure. And, you know, David Ruiz, Benjamin Kramaski, it's a toss-up. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Kramaski just because I think this is a bad team and it's a good opportunity to get him on the pitch and let him get some confidence and hopefully get, you know, a goal contribution. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Lawson Sunderland either just because we haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah.
Okay, up top, who you got? You're throwing Rojas up there on the right wing?
Rojas on the right, Afonso on the left, and then Luis Suarez on the striker.
Is that what you think is going to happen? Or is that, I mean, I know that's what you want to happen, but is that what you think is going to happen?
Do you want to think what I think is going to happen?
Yeah.
I think Tata's going to play the exact same starting 11 as last time.
Well, he can't play the other one.
Yeah, well, he's going to play Kramaski in there, but I won't be surprised if Tata throws on every single one of the starters from last time around, barring Gomez, because it's just what Tata does, right? No, I think this is a game where he's going to rest a few, and it's going to be, I'm hoping, and I think it's going to be quite similar to what we just talked about, with a few changes here and there.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind Afonso Suarez and Matias Rojas. Lionel Messi, is he available for this game? And you're like, if you're the coach and you get to choose if he's available, are you bringing him off for 30 minutes? Are you starting him? It doesn't sound like you're starting
depending on how the game goes, I think we'll bring him on for like 15, 20 minutes just to have a run out and stay fresh. But I don't think it's worth starting him. Not against New England, not on that turf.
Yeah, and tell him to jog the entire time. Yeah. There's been some rumblings, but not from anyone, not from Suarez or anyone with the team, that Suarez might not play because it's turf. I guess he didn't play on turf in Brazil last year. I didn't double check that, but I saw that. But it does feel like you can't, I wouldn't risk Leo Campana coming off a hamstring injury. I don't think he's going to start Schneider Borgelin. So I wouldn't start Robert Taylor either. Yeah. What's up?
Afonso on the left. Matias Rojas is a false striker and Pep Casas is in the right wing. There you go. Solved it.
We can bring up Casas for two more games. So maybe we'll see.
It's a solution.
Okay. So you think it's going to be the same lineup as last week, minus Gomez and throwing in maybe Matias Rojas on the left wing? Is that what you think is going to happen?
Yeah. I think it's, I do have a sense that he is going to play Noah Allen in left back He's going to play Freire and Aviles as the center back, Chelo in the right back position, then Busquets, Ruiz, and Gressel in the midfield, Afonso as the left winger, Suarez, and then Matas Rojas. That's what I think Tata's going to play. So we've had both iterations of what I want to play and then what I think Tata's going to play.
Okay, guys, that was an hour and 15 minutes. We talked about some of the injury news. We talked about Matas Rojas. I gave my thoughts on some of the things that I think is concerning about his fit, but I do think he's a good player. We talked a little bit about this weekend's game, and we talked about the new kits and a couple things in the beginning. Anything else before we wrap it up here? Anything else on your mind? Anything else to look out for?
Yeah, one thing that we need to look out for is that Inter Miami is on top of the MLS table, and we're soon going to be going way ahead of everybody else. So hopefully we can rack up a few wins before the international break and make a run for that supporter shield.
Yeah, the only other team on 18 points is the LA Galaxy, and we went to their house and got a point. So you got to feel pretty good about that. Anyways, guys.
They look very good.
They do. Yeah, they do. All right, guys. This was episode number 26. We appreciate you all joining. We will be back for the pregame show on Saturday evening in the hour before kickoff. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, that show's live on YouTube, and we'd really appreciate it if you join us. It's a lot of fun, and it gets us into the mood for Inter Miami. We do it, again, the hour before kickoff. And then we'll be back Sunday for a postgame show, and we'll go from there. But other than that, it was a lot of fun. I'm really excited about Matas Rojas, and we'll see you next time.